You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Happy Monday, everybody. Welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we, of course, talk about the Indiana Pacers as always. My name's Tony East. I cover the team for Forbes in the West Indianapolis Community News. And free agency is going strong, and the Pacers are involved and doing stuff. They made a trade, they made two signings, and they didn't sign a terrible, terrible contract. And joining me on the other line to talk about all of the craziness from this past weekend, Adam Friedman. Adam, did you get $120 million this weekend?
No, you told me how much we made in this pocket this month, and I was happy. And I'll tell you, it was not even close to the $120 million Gordon Hayward got. I will say that I am surprised he got 4 years from anybody considering his age. Even if he returns to, like, you know,
player option. I think he got a player option as well. That's not official, but he might.
Okay, whatever. I mean, that's a lot of money. I mean, especially for I get the Hornets probably are thinking like, well, when else are we ever going to get a guy like this ever again, right? Even of his caliber, but like, you're basically just saying we're going from Nick Batum, arguably the worst contract in the NBA. I can make a case it's the worst.
Wait, it could be worse. They could have waived and stretched Nick Batum to be able to sign Gordon Hayward.
Well, that's what I'm saying. They're going from arguably the worst contract in the NBA. They're not even a playoff team. Not even legitimately even a probably even close to being a playoff team, even with signing Hayward. Maybe if the first – if LaMelo's or something, they're still probably 2 years away. To now basically maybe having the worst contract in the NBA again if stuff goes bad again for Hayward.
Yeah. So the Pacers, for those who are unaware and are counting on us for the information here, Pacers were nose deep in the Hayward stuff, and Danny Ainge was asking for more, trying to get the Pacers to give up more. Scott Agnes even reported, or tweeted, I guess, but that counts as a report given the way he said it, that Gordon Hayward was willing to take a little less to come play for the Pacers, right?
Or for 100, right? That was the rumor.
Yeah, I don't know if the exact details were ever laid out. I had kind of heard whispers of 3 for $80, but 4 for $100 was also thrown out. Same deal. And then, you know, that never works out because Ainge is I'm not going to blame Ainge. You know, there could be a lot of factors at play, but
no. But if that ask is real, that is ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah.
He got way ahead of himself.
Asking for like Miles plus Warren or Miles plus Vic, which is insane. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. So, well, who does he think he is? I'm sorry.
That's ridiculous. So
I'll do it in a second.
Hayward just says, "Screw it." Well, and this is what we talked about. Me and Adam talked about this last Friday. Eventually, the space dries up and the pressure comes on for someone to make a decision. That person who made the decision was Gordon Hayward himself because this is why he opted out, right? He knew he had a big deal from someone else. It was the Hornets. Michael Jordan calls him and says, "I want you." Boom, 4 for $120 to the Hornets. So, as this, you know, he's not on the Pacers, whatever. But the reason that this ends up being when it's 4 for $100 to stretch, right? At that point, it's like it already hurts to give away Turner as much as I would have done it because I think Hayward's really good. I mean, that's going to be a painful contract on the back end. 4 for $120. Okay, you know what? Pacers dodged a bullet almost at that point. No, not even almost. They did dodge a bullet at that point.
Well, I don't even know how they pull together $30 million worth of salaries. I guess you threw like Lamb and Aaron Holiday or McDermott, yeah. Aaron Holiday, but like then you're just talking about scrapping a big chunk of your team for him. The thing I had to say about this whole thing is clearly Hayward had a couple suitors outside of the Pacers in Boston, right? Clearly he had the Hornets, maybe the Knicks, maybe even the Hawks, right? So he knew when he opted out he could get something, right? He maybe wanted to go Indiana, as Shams was reporting Friday, he was eyeing Indiana for a spot for whatever. But what I don't get is Boston clearly overplayed their hand.
It is.
Like, right?
Because, like, here's probably what was happening. Danny Ainge probably was saying on the calls with KP, hey, he's going to sign with Charlotte. He's really going to do it. If you give up whoever, whatever, right now, like, we're done here. And KP's like, no. You know, like, if he signs for that much in Charlotte, whatever, we don't care. And then he did. And so the Celtics lose him for nothing and are forced to sign Jeff Teague and Tristan Thompson. They're fine players. They're not as good as Gordon Hayward or Miles Turner. So they get screwed. The Pacers keep Miles Turner, who's a good basketball player, and Gordon Hayward gets a bunch of money. So the Celtics kind of got screwed here.
Yeah, I mean,
because of that, if the way he was thinking.
To me, this is like actually a common theme. You basically, if you take out the fact that they got Jason Tatum, and which that's a fantastic move, so don't get me wrong, it's hard. But like, what have the Celtics really accomplished with arguably what is the greatest draft assets of all time? / like being able to sign a bunch of great free agents, and yet they've gotten a few Eastern Conference finals.
Well, okay, so they did the trade to get Tatum on top of the Nets trade. Remember, because they had the first pick that year.
But I'm saying, I'm trying to say here is Danny Ainge, like, I think, envisions himself as some like masterminding GM genius. And a lot of the times they end up with like very little or nothing. They lose things for nothing, right? I mean, I have a feeling we go back to this Hayward thing. It's going to be a big deal to Ramble even just resign him because you can't replace cap space you don't have.
Exactly.
And that's big. And you can see it ramification with the Bucks right now. We're basically getting just – if they could, the Bucks should have resigned Brogdon. I mean, 100%.
Yep.
Even if they had injury concerns, they should have because they could have traded that contract at any point. They needed $21 million right now to get Bogdan if they wanted to tomorrow. Literally, they could have. And
yep.
Right, because Bogdan's seeking 4 for $72 million and they could have done that. So I don't know. I mean, like, I think he thought he was in a better position because I think he thought the Pacers couldn't return to the same roster as last year. And the Pacers were like, no, we can do this and just run it back because they're going to have to make some big changes at some point anyway. So they're like, why would we do it this summer? We could do it next summer. And for all they know, Hayward could be available next summer again for a trade if they really wanted it.
That's true. That's true. So here's the thing.
Sorry.
We'll talk about this tomorrow because I think the most common thing I'm getting now on Twitter that kind of the dust is settling given where the Pacers are is, so they didn't do anything? They're not really improving the team? Well, not really. But we'll get to how they can be better anyway. But that's neither here nor there. So Hayward just bolts for Charlotte. And good for him, too. His agency played this out perfectly. For them, they played it perfectly. They said, yeah, we want to go somewhere that would require a trade. But they knew in their head they had these options all the time. I mean, it was well played from them. So that was the biggest Pacers move I think they could make. And it ends up that they shouldn't have made it because if it would have taken paying him 4 for $120 million to get him, they should not get Gordon Hayward. That easy to me.
No, not with the risk of his injury history and his age. Like, and that's what I mean. If he's available, let's say next summer or whatever, and you see him come back and play really well, I don't know then why he'd be available. But if somehow he wants out or whatever, then maybe make the move. But like taking on that kind of contract with the Oladipo extension looming, if he does somehow play really well and you want to return, like you're moving your cap into an astronomical sphere of money for a team that maybe can't win a championship, and then you're just not paying. Like, then why make the payments? You know what I mean? Like, even right now, if they have to pay Oladipo, say $30 million a year, they're not going that much above their current salaries because he already makes 21. But if they're doing that plus paying Hayward 30, and you know, it just starts to get kind of ridiculous.
Right.
When you're paying two guys 30, you know, two other guys 20 plus, and your team's not even competing for your conference finals, like you can't make that math work. Essentially,
I always thought so. In my head, Hayward was a good enough fit. And a good enough player that you'd be willing to pay him neutral value as well as give up stuff for him. But if he's overpaid, that goes out the window for me. So we go back to what we talked about on Miles Turner season recap. Excited to see him under Bjorkgren because the thing with Miles is, and this, I guess this isn't technically an over saga because it seems like the Pacers are still trying to improve the roster. It wasn't like they were like Hayward or run it back because we got reporting after the fact from some other big reporters. Let's start with this is adjacent to Hayward. Other players they pursued. Michael Scotto, who's on the Hoops Hype now, formerly of The Athletic, very plugged in, reporting that the Pacers and Rockets explored potential sign-in trades for Fred VanVleet, who ended up signing 4 for $85 million with the Toronto Raptors. Pretty good contract for VanVleet. About, I think, what he's worth.
Yeah, the Brogdon money, I think, is exactly what he did.
Exactly of the Brogdon contract, the exact same amount. I would say those players are about equal. They're both pretty good point guards.
Yeah, experience sent a point guard who had a lot of college experience, came in late in the career, developed.
Yep.
I mean, same. They're kind of identical in some stuff, too. But yes. Yeah.
So that would probably have been the same kind of deal where it's a Turner in the trade to bring in VanVleet. That didn't get reported enough for me to say with confidence that's the case. Maybe that was a Depot thing. You know, the Raptors have one more year on Kyle Lowry's contract. They could have tried to run it back with that group. I don't know. The Raptors had a chaotic free agency, so I don't really know what they were thinking. But Giannis, that is their thing. It's not like they pivoted off of Hayward and the Pacers were like, we're done. You know, we're just running it back. They were looking at Fred at the same time. That clearly didn't work. We don't have as much info on that one, and we didn't get, you know, with Hayward, we got the report that he wanted to come to Indiana. With Fred, we never got that report at all. So it's hard to go anything beyond what these few sentences say from Scotto. But it seems like the Pacers, again, were aggressively at some points trying to get other players because we'll go to a third one now. Bogdan Bogdanovic, who is in flux. He signed a 4-year, $72 million offer sheet with the Atlanta Hawks. The Kings have 48 hours to match. So James Hamm of NBC Sports Sacramento, that's a mouthful, said that the year it was, I forget his exact wording, so I got to make this right, Kings, Bogdanovich drawing interest from Pacers and Hawks. And then I don't remember exactly where. Oh, the Indiana Pacers struck out on a Gordon Hayward trade with the Boston Celtics. Indy was willing to part with Miles Turner in the transaction, but the Celtics asked for more and then said, would the Pacers, whose sources say have shown interest in Bogdanovich, consider a similar swap? So there, that was the Pacers are interested in Bogdanovich, but there was other reporting out of Sacramento saying they weren't willing to include Miles Turner in a trade for him. So they, you know, if the initial package the Kings wanted for him was just DiVincenzo, Wilson, and Ersan Ilyasova, right? Like, you could probably do McDermott and a first-round pick and have walked away with Bogdanovich there. But that is now irrelevant as well because Bogdanovich signed a deal with the Hawks. So the Pacers, again, potentially tried to get a guy, and it didn't happen.
Yeah, so there's going to be some ramifications to this. The first one off is going to be what happens with Turner come the regular season. One, are they going to just play the two-center lineup? Are they going to wait for Jimmy Lane to get healthy and try to go him at the three or at the four? I mean, who knows what they're going to try to do? Same thing with Justin Holiday, possibly. Same thing with McDermott and whatnot. How is he going to react in general? I mean, I think there is a concern as somebody just watching from the outside that with Oladipo kind of giving mixed signals throughout the offseason, and then you kind of piss off Turner. Like, are you heading to this catastrophic season where basically everybody's mad and playing time is being all weird and everybody's being selfish? Or does it go the other way, right? Do the people, they hunker down? Do they kind of almost in spite of the front office, in spite of it, and do they make it work? And then all of a sudden, you know, we're sitting a year from now and everybody, all five of their starters are back and we're thinking, oh, this actually works really well. I mean, it probably won't be either of those, but that's just a concern, I guess.
Yeah, the popular concern I saw was from people, and I get that where this would be founded from, is, oh, is Turner going to come in, you know, awkward or mopey because he's in trade talks? Well, J. Michael astutely pointed out, and I tweeted about this on Twitter, one, he's been in trade talks for years, literally years, and so I doubt it has any effect on him. And as we learned from Jonathan Abrams' report and Bleacher Report last year, the Pacers always tell guys when they're in trade talks, right? Darren Collison was one
that professional too. His job. It sucks. It's annoying. Don't get me wrong.
It sucks for the player. But the other flip side, and I don't know Miles' psyche enough to dig into this, right? We know he's already kind of driven by confidence and emotion sometimes. But like, some guys are like, wouldn't you be flattered to be like, hey, the only way we're giving you up for Gordon effing Hayward? Like, teams want to get you on our team, right? Like, look at that Kings report, for example. So who knows exactly how it'll affect him there. And then, yeah, to what you said, I think they're going to, you know, you don't pay him $18 million to not start the guy, right? I think he's going to start for sure. The question is, yeah, does his role change at all under Bjorkren in a negative way, potentially? I doubt it, but you just never know.
Yeah, I mean,
and that's if he's still on the team. Trades are still possible, right? Buddy Hield is now potentially available again if they match his Bogdanovich offer sheet. So who knows?
We'll know that in 2 days. I doubt they will, though.
Oh, really? I think they for sure will.
Oh, you think they for sure will because of the asset thing?
Yeah, he's a good player. I think you just keep him.
Yeah, I think I'd trade him in 2 months.
They just gave Fox $160 million. You can't immediately turn around and say, hey, we're not that invested in this team. I don't think you can do that.
That's fair. No, that's fair. You're right. They might. I was thinking they just wouldn't because it's too weird. I can't figure out how to make them work. But maybe they just run it back for a year and trade. What I was going to say, this is why you hired Bjorkren, right? You hired a guy you think is an offensive genius or an offensive, you know.
Creative.
Creative. This is why you sent him. He said when he went in the press conference that he could make the two centers work. Maybe you didn't believe it. Maybe you, of course, would rather have kind of a more...
Well, that's what he was going to say either way. But yes, it's
you. Yes, exactly. Right. But I'm saying this is why you brought him in. And you know, I'd be interested to see if you bring in a real somebody's creative offensively, if there's some way you could play Turner more at the four. I know his, even on defense, right? I mean, the thing we've noticed from Turner the past few years is he's really improved as a perimeter defender. And Sabonis isn't that great. And he's getting better too, but Turner definitely on a level. And maybe that's more valuable than rim protection than you think. You know what I mean? There's things like that. I don't know that they can just do. And maybe him shoot a ton of threes and he makes them at a really high clip and all of a sudden it can work. Cause if he can, you know, take four threes a game and make them at a 40% clip or close to that, then pretty much the offense should work just fine. Like it shouldn't have any issues. So, I mean, I don't know. You aren't worth giving up Turner for like nothing, right? You're using
it as a chip
to get better, not as just to get rid of. And that's what Boston kind of misread. I mean, they thought Pacers just wanted to get rid of Turner for, you know what I mean? Or they're desperate to, you know, whatever. And the Pacers kind of like, no, we don't mind bringing this back. We just, if we can improve, obviously we're going to do that kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. So they're clearly trying to improve, right? They're hunting for the best available free agent over and over, whether that's Hayward to Van Vliet to, well, outside of Anthony Davis, who's not actually even technically available, but
not a free agent.
Yeah. Hayward and Van Vliet and Bogdanovich, right? They're going for the guy. They just, it couldn't happen. It didn't happen. for Bogdanovich's case, he was restricted. The Kings literally would have had all the leverage in that situation anyway, so that makes sense. Fred, I don't even know what he was considering, and Hayward didn't end up being in the card. So that's what didn't happen for the Pacers, the stuff they were chasing that didn't happen, which makes me think they still could be active on the trade market after free agency, but I don't know. I mean, training camp's in 8 days, so it's kind of running low on time there. But let's turn to what the Pacers did do. They made – so we talked about last week Justin Holiday stuff, but they have done many things since then. So we're going to take a quick little break to before we talk about what the Pacers did do this week. But first, of course, we're going to talk about Built Bar first. If you listen to the Hollinger Duncan show, this is my favorite lead about Built Bar ever. Built Bar makes delicious protein bars, and as Nate Duncan says, most protein bars taste like the inside of a sawmill, but Built Bar does not. They are 100% covered in chocolate protein bars that are soft and easy to chew and come in 18 delicious flavors. I'm a big fan of the mint brownie one and the peanut butter chocolate one, but there's also peanut butter brownie, which is different peanut butter on its own. They're just all really good. The texture matches the flavor. They're delicious. They're great for losing or maintaining weight. They've got a coconut almond one, for example, with 18 grams of protein, 180 calories, 5 grams of sugar, and 5 grams of net carbs. So really healthy, really delicious, all chocolate protein bars. You got to check them out. Go to BuiltBar.com, promo code LOCKEDON, all one word. You'll get 20% off your next order. Use that promo code LOCKEDON for 20% off at BuiltBar.com. So, yeah, again, not doing Justin Holiday here. We talked about that last Friday, and we'll talk about, you know, maybe how he fits in the rotation in a future show this week or how the team's rotation is going to look. What we are talking about is all the moves that have been made over the weekend. They were a little more minor and did not merit their own podcast.
The Pacers cut down on TJs, finally.
They finally cut down on TJs. We're not going to start there, though. First thing they did was Saturday, I think. No, it was Sunday morning. And this was kind of, kind of expected to me. They needed a break glass in case of emergency forward center depth, and they re-signed Jakar Sampson to a minimum contract. That's perfect. Jakar Sampson is a great minimum player.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I think he showed that he can step in at times and be enough. I guess that makes sense, right?
About Jakar, so these insurance guys, these like Jakar played in 31 games, 32 games this year, right? Less than half of the Pacers' games.
Played in most of the bubble, though, in playoffs.
He did. It's hard to find a balance of a player who's good, but not too good that, like, if you tell them they're going to play in less than half the games, they'll take that role. So to find the right balance of a guy who fits that, who if he doesn't play, like, whatever, but he knows that any injury he'll be in is hard. And they got that guy for the minimum. And like you just brought up, in the bubble, he was filling in a lot. He was the backup center in the playoffs. They played him over Goga. So that's a good signing. I like what Caitlin Cooper pointed out. The only way this has downside risk to me is if they decide to play him over Goga in regular season spurts, because you know with the G League kind of in flux on how that's going to work next year and less training camp time, it's going to be harder to develop guys this year. So if Jakar ends up playing it all over Goga, yeah, that's a problem. But outside of that, if he's just purely injury insurance, which is what we both hope, then that's a great signing to me.
Yeah, honestly, Goga's going to have other issues with two centers in starting lineup. We'll talk about that at a later date because this is going to be actually a deep discussion about that. No, the Jakar thing makes sense because, one, he doesn't have to play center anyways. He can play a little four if you need him to. Four and three, I guess, if you really needed him to. And so, yeah, I mean, it's just there's a guy like him can make a lot of money in this league by being the exact player that he was last season, because he can make $1.7 million, whatever, you know, the minimum is each year for the next 4 or 5 years, just basically doing what he's doing, which is being a guy who when there's an injury, he can step up, play 15, 20 minutes and give some quality time and not be, you know, a net negative on the court. And then he also is willing to kind of not be overly into himself and can be okay with a reduced role and, you know, be happy just being part of the team. So, I mean, yeah, it's a great sign for the Pacers, to be honest.
He's tight with other guys in the team. He's from Akron, Ohio. So, you know, I don't know if the Cavs had interest, but close enough to home for him, especially in the pandemic. I'm sure that has some value to him. And for a guy that 2 years ago with the Bulls, right, couldn't even make the roster, had to get a 10-day at the end of the season to play any NBA games that year, to get a fully guaranteed minimum deal has to be very appealing. So I think that's pretty good business. You know, we talked about replacements for him, but, I mean, at the minimum, that's a sold for me. I'm all in on that.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I think – especially with just a short offseason, whatnot, having continuity is also good, right? You could bring in some other guy to play a kind of spot, but like, you know, if you have an injury the first, second game, you know what you're getting him, right? You've already seen it. You trust him to, you know, he understands the locker room, understands everything. So the only difference is the coaching, which you have to readjust to, but I'm not sure that's that.
It was everybody else.
Yeah. So it's not like a unique thing to him. And I think there is something to say this year, especially with the shortened offseason and whatnot, to have kind of continuity when the year starts. I think the Pacers will benefit from all this kind of stuff when the year starts, in terms of the fact, I guess, and Sabonis played in like 8 months, but they'll probably start off a lot better than did last, let's put it that way. You know, where the first three games, they were literally hot garbage because they couldn't figure anything out. I think they'll be a little better to start, you know, come December 27th.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. So what do you want to do first? The Exhibit 10 training camp guys or the trade?
Just name them off real fast because we don't need to do too much on it.
Okay. So after signing Jakar, that brought the roster to 14 and Cassius Stanley would have been 15. So then it turned to training camp mode. Who are they going to bring in for that? They're at 17 out of 20 guys in the roster now, so they can do three more. But two of them are going to be, one is Rayshon Hammonds from Georgia. He's kind of a lefty power forward who's a mostly interior guy, but, you know, can dribble a little bit. We'll see how much he does in the preseason. But the other one is Amita Barima, who, if you'll remember, was on the Pacers in preseason last year. Lanky center, can run the floor really well. Leads the Big East in field goal percentage all time and has a bunch of blocks and rebound records for UConn. Those two guys will be on the training camp roster, and they have Exhibit 10 clauses, which means if they report to the Mandants at all next year, they get like a $50,000 bonus. So good for them. Okay. So after signing Sampson, let's get to the big thing. The Pacers made a big trade, and by a big trade, I mean a pretty minor trade that has some pretty big effects on the team. So after signing Sampson, they were $1.5 million over the tax. The Pacers are not paying the tax this year. We've talked about that on the show many times for various reasons that it's just not happening. So they had to get under the tax. We talked about the various ways they could do that, which would be trading Leaf with assets to get off his money or waiving and stretching him. Well, they today traded TJ Leaf and a future second round pick, which has not been reported which second round pick it is. Although none of their second round picks are good enough that you worry about one being an overpay to get off his money. They traded TJ Leaf and a second round pick for shooting guard, point guard, whatever position, Jalen LeCue from the Oklahoma City Thunder. So what this move did, Adam, I've been talking for a long time in a row, I'm sorry. What this move did is it swapped out TJ Leaf's $4.3 million salary for LeCue's $1.5 million salary on the Pacers' books this season, which gets them from $1.5 million over the tax to $1.2 million under the tax and gives them room to, A, be under the tax, and, B, add Cassius Stanley to the roster.
Yeah, it was a move that we thought would happen. We thought he'd either be stretched out over 3 years to reduce his number or trade if they can make it move. And the fact they only had to use one second-round pick is actually a positive, right? It took 2 seconds to get it off. What was the contract during draft day? I'm trying to remember.
Ed Davis was the one that took two.
Yeah, and that was the big one you pointed to. And now to quote Tony East on Twitter, I think it was, the way his contract is structured, right, is very weird. So they wanted to stretch him out. They could do it like over 7 years, basically, which would allow them.
I don't know
them,
if they're going to do that yet.
So. No, but they could. They could. And right. That would reduce the cap even more from like a $1.3 million or clear $1.5 million space to clear now having $1.3 million space.
Yeah, so LeCue's deal this year is it's the minimum all 3 years. Next year, it's guaranteed this year at $1.5 million, and then a non-guaranteed year and then a team option year. So they already have the savings under the tax. If they want, they can keep LeCue as their 15th guy. He's super athletic. His nickname on Basketball Reference is Baby Westbrook. So holding on to this guy might have some merit. Him and Cassius Stanley could just dunk all over everybody all the time, even though they'll never play. But another merit of trading for him is that, again, his contract is really cushy and awesome, right? So if he is on the roster next year, he makes $1.5 million. And if he stinks, whatever. You cut him. You don't owe him anything. After that, no big deal. If he's great, you have him at the minimum for two more seasons after that on a non-guaranteed deal both years. So if he gets hurt really badly, you can still cut him. No big deal. So that is a great contract. But the other advantage of that is, and you'll remember this came into play with Monte Ellis, because his deal technically has three more years left, if they waive and stretch LeCue, it'll stretch over 7 years, which sounds like a lot. But if you take the only amount of the guaranteed money, the $1.5 million, and stretch it over 7 years, it only is like $215,000 per season, which is nothing, right? Like, there's a point where it matters, you know, when you're saving $700,000, that is kind of something because it's close to a minimum. $200,000 is nothing, even if it is brutal that it's over 7 years. And that's pretty big savings this year. That could allow them to get another minimum contract, like a good player, like a useful player, on the roster again, or Alize Johnson back on the roster. So I guess it's possible they could waive and stretch him. I think that makes some sense. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I guess in the grand scheme of things, $200,000 really can't affect the cap space in the way like Monte Ellis is, what is it, 2.2 that he's under four. That's been kind of a brutal kind of stretch now that we look at it in, in hindsight and whatnot. So,
but if they do that, if they get LeQ down to 200,000 this year, they basically cut $4 million from the books just by dumping TJ Leaf with one second round pick, which is pretty good business, you know, considering what we talked about with Ed Davis.
We just looked so bad for telling them to pick up that option last year. I mean, I know we could not have predicted what happened.
I know,
but we just looked terrible.
Everybody who said they shouldn't pick it up just because he's not good. That you know, there were cap reasons to keep him, and the Pacers agreed with that. But they should not have done that.
Well, I mean, if you don't follow the cap, and really, I would say the way you follow the cap, and the way I kind of follow you following the cap, you would think we're idiots. Because like, why would you? Do you live so many years? But like, cap wise, it just made sense. It just made sense. Just believe us.
They have to dump a second because of their mistake, which sucks. And look, the other part of this is, like, we're celebrating them cutting the money because, you know, in theory, if they turn out to be awesome and they're willing to pay the tax next year, great. I don't think that's going to be the case. Them not paying the luxury tax is not something you, the fan, should celebrate. And they still have their MLE. So in theory, with that last roster spot, they could get someone pretty good with that.
Yeah.
But
assuming, and I don't know if this isn't true, but assuming the Thunder keep TJ Leaf, this is good for him. He needs to go to a place where he
can. That is a perfect team for him. The absolute.
Right. He can play some minutes, try to prove himself, stay in the league. Because right now he's heading towards playing, assume when it reopens, playing in China or Europe, whatever, when they can finally like do that whole international thing. That's where he's heading right now. So at least he can try to recover himself, maybe stay in the league, maybe become kind of an 11th, 12th man. I don't want to be working way in the rotation over time. But right, he's got to go somewhere and prove that because he's doing that.
This is it for him. It's either he's on probably the worst roster in the NBA next year. If he can't get in the rotation on that team, he's just not
going to be. The Knicks just raised their hands, but yes.
Touche. But yeah, if he can't get in the rotation on that team, he's just not an NBA player, and everybody will know that, and he'll be in Europe next year. And if he can, great. It's a place where he'll actually get to play. And the other thing you should not be celebrating, like the Pacers ducking the tax. I only calculate that stuff because it's interesting to me. And I guess, again, if they're actually going to be willing to pay it in future years, it makes sense to duck it now. The other thing is that should not be celebrated. They had to salary dump the 18th pick in the draft. That's a terrible pick and an embarrassing recollection of that draft. So,
should we pull up that draft real fast?
Do we have to? Yeah, who was the very next pick?
I don't think was he the very next pick when I'm thinking of?
No, John Collins was the very next pick. OG was a few picks later.
Hold on. I have the wrong. Was it 2017 draft. All right. Because we did not do this draft together. So
no, we did not. This is right before we started together.
So really brutal was Mitchell and Bam went 13 and 14 in this draft. None of the Pacers could have got them, but man, he could have moved up just a tiny bit. He could have got two, you know, all-star borderline all the players.
You'd rather have any of the next six picks after – actually, not even I think. You'd rather have the next six picks than Leaf right now. You know what I mean?
Well, the only one you wouldn't want is my boy Tyler Lydon, who went to Syracuse. Because he's also had a link.
Yeah,
so it was John Collins.
It was not a good pick. And, you know, it's brutal that the Pacers have to salary dump Leaf. But, hey, you know what? We Adam, we can celebrate that we were smart and ahead of the game and realized that TJ Leaf would be salary dumped. And I love Caitlin Cooper making a poll of what time will the Pacers PR dump the TJ Leaf trade, and during the Colts game was one of her choices. And guess what? It happened during the Colts game.
So the next six picks real quick were John Collins, Harry Giles, Terrence Ferguson, Jared Allen, OG and OG and OB. The next five, sorry. And the sixth one was Tyler Lydon. Lydon's out of the league also, so we're fine.
OG's the one that kills. Giles is getting flyers from other team, and he's the worst in that group. Terrence Ferguson's, again, an okay wing. He's not awesome, but he's fine. And Collins is good, and Allen is good, and Ananobi is good. So just
– Ananobi's like borderline, like he could be a starter. Is he a starter right now for them?
Yeah.
That
pick sucks.
Well, and that one kills because he's in your backyard, right? He's 40 minutes from you guys. You couldn't have – and he had a knee injury, and that's why he fell. Like if he had been able to play the full – yeah, just brutal.
If Goga turns out good, the Leaf pick will just continue to make no sense to me because every other pick of the KP era, right? EK, okay, whatever. He was injured the whole time. Sumner good. Alize good for his position. Holiday good for his position. Goga might end up good for his position. TBD on Stanley, but like every other pick could be good. And then Leaf just like, oh my God, that was terrible.
So do you think the Leaf pick is worse than picking Greg Oden over Kevin Durant? Because that was probably the worst
that
pick.
That was pretty justified, though. He was a stud prospect.
Yeah, it was justified, but man, that's like the most brutal pick awful for Portland ever. And KP was their GM, I believe.
See, that's
at that point.
The difference here is even at the time, very few people graded Leaf this high, I feel like. But whatever. We digress. So that was the Pacers moves. Sorry. Where this leaves them now is they have 14 guys on the roster if they keep LeQ with one roster spot to go. And that roster spot could go to Cassius Stanley, and their roster would be filled out. And that would mean the differences from the Pacers roster last year would be Alize Johnson, TJ Leaf out, Jalen LeQ, Cassius Stanley in. But again, that kind of stuff will materialize probably in the next couple of days. If the Pacers are still aggressively going for a trade, right? I mean, every day we've heard them in a trade rumor since free agency started. That could still be dynamic and changing, but I would guess, you know, again, training camp's in 8 days, that we're going to see a very similar Pacers roster to last year.
Well, I don't know. What's left, Tony? What left for them to move?
Funny you should say that. Let's take one more break, and this will be a shorter thing because there's not a lot left, but let's take one more break and talk about it. Okay, so what is left? What is left?
Yeah, seriously, what is left? I've absolutely no idea.
Well, let's get some background here because we talked about Justin Holiday on Saturday's podcast. Go back and listen to that. They got him on his non-bird rights, right? At 3 years, $18 million. That's a steal of a deal. What that does is the Pacers still have their MLE. So if they are willing to go into the tax, they have a pretty big way to acquire a good player. Now, let me tell you something else about the MLE. And I have a couple things to say because this segment is actually more about where the Pacers are at right now, more so than what they can still do. But anyway, they still have their MLE left, and the MLE can also – so if you're at like midpoint season and someone gets bought out, a minimum contract is prorated. The MLE is not. So signing a two-year deal with the MLE versus a two-year minimum is a different amount in midseason. So keeping the MLE for a buyout guy, not a terrible idea. Anywho, what the Pacers can do left is fill out that last roster. You know, if the queue is gone, they'll probably sign Cassius Stanley and then use either the BAE or the MLE to get forward depth, I guess. I don't really know. But the players left out there not looking awesome.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I think that's fair. No, but that's what I mean. Like, there's just so there's probably not anybody big name or worth to kind of talk about for more than a couple of seconds that who's left. But what, yeah. And so what I'm trying to figure out is there, unless there's some trade I'm missing, right? I don't really know what trade is out there either, right? I mean,
well, we can talk about Buddy Forever, but that's never been reported. It's just speculation.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Buddy Hield hasn't reported, and that would make sense, right? You could basically swap Turner and something for that right now.
So the best free agents left, I think, are like who are actually free agents. Hassan Whiteside, yeah. No chance, not happening.
Yeah, they don't need any more centers.
And I'm going to skip restricted guys because there's no point of wasting your MLE on a restricted guy. Markieff Morris, he would not accept the role he would have on the Pacers. Yeah. Langston Galloway also would not accept the role he would have on the Pacers. And Reggie Jackson. So...
Well, the Pacers have this problem where they have, 10 playable players in rotation, right?
Yes, exactly.
Right, the five starters, Justin Holiday, Jeremy Lamb, Doug McDermott, TJ McConnell, Goga, right?
And Aaron Holiday and Summer.
And Aaron Holiday. Well, okay. And so 12 maybe playable players.
Yeah.
And really, you only really want 10 at max and really 9, honestly. Yep. That's when they finally, you know, they actually finally got good last year when they settled on their 9. When there was a starting five, and then it was McConnell, McDermott, both Holidays, right? That was kind of when things finally settled down. They got pretty good for a while.
Yep.
And obviously, you had some injuries, you had some swapping and whatnot, but that's when they felt like things were really rolling for them. So, yeah, so unless you can find a way to reduce that 12 to 9, or really 4 of those into 1, or maybe 3 of those into 1, I don't really know what else you do.
I am with you.
You're just bringing a guy to, you know what I mean, to be in the rotation because they have playing rotation players.
Yeah, the MLE, like, so the thing is, even if they could have just given it to Justin Holiday, it doesn't actually matter if they're given the situation they're in because they didn't make any other big changes. Whatever, you can use the MLE again next year, so no big deal. But yeah, they didn't use it, so I guess that's valuable for them in the future. But yeah, there's not a lot left out there for them to do. And again, the thing is, what's the point? What's the point of spending at this point? Because no one they're going to sign, like you're saying, is going to be in their rotation or play. It's like, what value are they adding to your team at this point of your, you know, like you could get a young guy like Harry Giles, I guess, who comes in and whatever is young enough to improve. And then maybe have, like Thon Maker, like the guy you talked about on the center show a lot. You know, he's 23. Okay. You can bring him in on a minimum. He probably won't play, but maybe he gets a little better under your own tutelage and grows into thing. That's maybe what they could do with like a minimum deal, but it looks like going forward, there's not a lot left for them to do.
Yeah. I think for me, what, there's not enough new right now, but I think I would look at it's probably a March trade deadline. Like the Pacers, if the question is how many players they have that they can play and what, you know, all this stuff is going on with that, I would expect them to be maybe a bigger player than usual during the trade deadline this year.
Well,
maybe
so,
not. I mean,
sorry.
So that's the thing to look for is like what could happen in the trade deadline? What are some tidbits out there and whatnot? But for now, I think the next 8 days, they're pretty much locked in.
I agree. So we've heard for years about, you know, McMillan potentially holding back Miles Turner. And that's almost unequivocally true, like, obviously, because
– offensively, for sure.
For 100%. Sure. Did not encourage threes. That's Miles' thing. Didn't, you know, ask him to reverse the ball and play the right way instead of letting Miles be creative in the way he let Domas be creative. So I think we'll learn a lot about Miles and his value under Bjorkgren in a way that could be helpful in assessing his value at the trade deadline this year, like you're saying. And if they are able to cut some salary at that point, maybe then they could use, like I talked about, that MLE to beat other teams on the buyout market should someone good become available. So that, I think, is the moves coming for them will come, like you're saying, in I don't actually know when the deadline is this year, but in March or something like that.
If Bjorkgren can make Turner's a bonus particular, the team literally elevates its level from, like,
oh my gosh,
this 4-5 seed to top 3 seed. Because, like, both are on such good contracts, too, for what their value is. I mean, even right now, they're probably slightly underpaid. Sabonis definitely is. Turner, you can make a case, isn't. But if he reaches whatever we think he could be, he'll definitely will become underpaid at some point. Yeah. And so, I mean, so then you probably won't trade either of them. But, I mean, I just – obviously, there'll be stuff with Oladipo throughout the whole year. So we'll have to, like, deal with that from the beginning of December 1 through whenever he – if he leaves, whenever he does. You know what I mean? So that's kind of the things to watch, I guess. But I hope maybe there'll be some kind of, in the next couple of days, some statement from Miles, but maybe he'll just kind of wait till training camp. Probably wait till training camp.
I bet that's what'll happen. I bet it's
just like, what, you know, and maybe there is some trade we're just not thinking of. I mean, maybe it's Buddy Hield. Maybe there's some other, you know, three or four out there that they make the move for. I don't see it at the moment, I guess. And not that I'm like, you're more in tune than me, but I don't think you see it either.
I agree with you there. So I have something else I want to talk about though. In this
section. Yeah, go for it.
This is less about them spending and what they can do and more about what they might not do. Because they probably, so we talk about them being under the tax and stuff like that. And they can plan and get under all they want, but all these guys still have bonuses in their contract, for example. Domantas Sabonis is a guy I'm going to laser in on this segment on for a second. He has $2.6 million in bonuses every year on his contract. He's $1.3 million if he makes an all-star team. He's another $1.3 million if he makes an All-NBA team. So he's getting the $1.3 for making All-Star last year. So I bet, and by I bet, I mean, I don't know, but I'm betting the Pacers are trying to give themselves enough wiggle room under the tax where even if Sabonis is amazing and makes All-NBA, they still don't pay the tax. And I bet that's playing into their hand to a point where they might not do anything else just so they can have that wiggle room just in case where Sabonis is awesome, they're still okay.
Right, because with the salary cap, you know, and a bonus, it's considered an unlikely bonus until you achieve it. Then the next year, consider a likely bonus, right?
So, bonuses count against the cap, and unlikely ones don't. So, Sabonis
exactly
got a one.
So Domas, go ahead. 1.3 didn't count last year because he wasn't likely yet, but then it became an all-star team like the next year. So that makes sense. I mean, he could make All-NBA if he continues to have, you know, progressing, right? I mean, center spots weaker. For sure. I mean, you're probably still going to think like the Goberts, the Embiids, and whatever Davis is called at some point. But you can make a case, you know, next year he comes with a fantastic year. I think if he was the stretch
five center. It's unlikely but possible, and they have to consider it.
Yeah. So you might be right, and that's unreasonable.
Depot has a $250,000 unlikely bonus. I think Turner has an unlikely bonus in there. I forget it. He's getting his. No, he has.
Oh, Turner's is flat. I don't turn to have very many bonuses. It's just a flat money.
Turner's got something. I forget what it is.
Oh, he does? Okay.
Yeah, because I don't remember. Anyway, it's whatever. I'm talking too much. Warren is getting his. So they just have to be clear enough that they can go, okay, phew, you know what I mean? And Depot's is actually winning the finals is baked into his. So maybe if they win the finals, they say, screw it, we'll pay the tax, we won the finals. But, you know, with all the other ones that don't have a winning finals initiative in there, I'm sure they'd like to say, even if this happens, we're okay. So there's a chance that they're really cheap and they, you know, we talked about the last segment. You know, maybe they keep the queue again, but, you know, waiving him seems like something that would behoove them in a way that would let them have that breathing room. So I don't know yet, but we'll see.
But I will say it is amazing after all this stuff, pretty much the same Pacer roster plus a second round pick is returning next year.
Yeah, we'll see if they fill out that last spot or not. And again,
literally they're bringing the top 12 back.
Yeah, this is way too much nitty gritty BS that no one cares about. So because the G League season's all jacked up too, two-way contracts have been altered, did not have a limit on days, right? And they don't count against the cap. So why would you sign a guy to the last roster spot on your team when you could just throw in your two-way contract guys out there on the court. You know, that's another way to save some money. I think that that is also a possibility, and they could leave that roster spot open again for the buyout market MLE spot. So I actually think it's kind of likely they only carry 14 guaranteed guys into training camp or after training camp.
Okay. I'm with you.
No one cares about any of that but me, but I'm explaining it anyway.
Okay. Well, we all appreciate it.
Thank you, Adam. So
I don't have anything else. I'm tapped out.
Yeah, we'll have to. The only thing I think I'll monitor this week is what they do with LeQue. What if they sign Cassius Stanley and what kind of deal they sign him to? I'm imagining again that it will be a minimum deal using part of their MLE, but who knows? Just so it can be 3 years. And then Alize Johnson, what's up with him? Is he going to get a deal from another team? Is he, you know, if the Pacers do part ways with LeQue, does he get that spot? Who knows? We'll see.
Yeah. I think it's good enough.
That's a summary of where we're at. Yeah, we're getting too boring here. So not going to be a lot of free agency stuff coming up, I'm sure, tomorrow. I think tomorrow what we want to do is address how the Pacers can get better in this coming season. And then maybe Wednesday getting to like rotation stuff. Who knows? We're taking Thanksgiving off unless something huge happens that day. So that's it. And then Friday, we'll think something. By then, the Pacers will have made some move. I'm positive of them. We can talk about it then.
Yeah, I'm sure they will.
Yep. So it could be a minor anything, like filling out their training camp roster or something. But, yeah, thank you guys so much for tuning in today. I hope you're enjoying free agency and watching all the pandemonium of pandemic spending happen. We'll come back tomorrow with more coverage, and we'll see you then.